Homeward is committed to partnering with parents and equipping you with the resources you need to raise your kids to become responsible adults. And Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment company, is proud to partner with Homeward to bring you the following podcast presentation.
Life moves pretty fast.
Slow down there.
Hurry it up. We're burning daylight.
Will you take a pill or something? Will you just relax?
Nobody likes to admit that they can't handle the pressure.
I just want to do God's will.
I'm Jim Burns. Well, sometimes the pressures of life just don't seem like they should be such a burden because they involve, well, spiritual activities and acts of service that society deems to be good. Well, the busyness of life is fueled by both healthy and unnecessary activities. And the key is learning how to move to a healthy pace. And sometimes that requires we respond to God's invitation to solitude and silence. Well, during the next half hour, I'll continue my conversation with author Ruth Haley Barton. She's passionate about helping busy moms and dads and kids experience peace amidst the pressures of life by slowing down. You'll learn how this practice can be of benefit to you as well next here on Homeward. So keep it right here.
From the studios at the Homeward Center for Youth and Family on the campus of Azusa Pacific University, welcome to Homeward with parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns. I'm Roger Marsh. Before we get into part two of Jim's continuing conversation with Dr. Ruth Haley Barton, talking about experiencing peace amidst the pressures of life, please know how grateful we are for the peace that you bring to this ministry every time you make a financial contribution. Of course, Homeward is the Homeward Center for Youth and Family is a part of Azusa Pacific University. But this broadcast outreach, our web outreach, everything we do in our seminars and printed materials, that's completely listener supported. And it's because of the faithful contributions of listeners just like you that we're able to provide these resources, many of them without cost. If you can give a gift online today, we would love to hear from you at homeward.com. And now here's Jim. Welcome to Homeward. I'm Jim Burns. Today we're talking in part two about stopping the madness in your life. And Ruth Haley Barton is with us again. She's the co-founder of the Transforming Center, which is a ministry that seeks to shape and care for the souls of people. She's also served on the staff of several great churches, one being Willow Creek Community Church in the Chicago area, a wonderful church, as the Associate Director of Spiritual Formation. She lives with her husband, Chris, and their three daughters in Wheaton, Illinois. And she's back again with us. Ruth, thanks again for being able to stay with us on this program as well.
So glad to be here.
Solitude and silence. I mean, these are not values that most of us pay a whole lot of attention to at times in our lives. But if we did, we would be amazed at the outcome. And that's, in many ways, what we're talking about. You've got a great book called Invitation to Solitude and Silence, Experiencing God's Transforming Presence. And it's not only a book about solitude and silence, but in many ways, it's your story, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Start from the beginning of my own feelings of desire and desperation and move right through the journey as it's happened for me.
Sure. And it's very hopeful. I mean, I loved the last program that we did with you, and I hope our listeners, if they didn't get to hear that, they'll be able to get the tape or something, because in many ways we started off talking about just finding some sacred space and how important solitude is and what it does and how it can transform us in the midst of, for many of us, and you described this so well, as outward busyness, kind of inner chaos. One of the phrases that you used, it's actually a chapter in your book, was people can be dangerously tired. That really made a lot of sense to me. Talk about dangerously tired.
Yes, well, I think there are at least two kinds of tired in the world. The first kind of tired is a good tired, and that's the way that we all feel after we have accomplished something out of the best of our own abilities and gifts, and we've worked hard, and it's to be expected that we'd be tired. But we know that after a night's sleep or after a weekend off, or maybe even we need a vacation, but that we'll be able to get back at it and we'll be okay because it's a normal kind of tired. Dangerously tired is different than that because it is a kind of tired that accumulates over time, and it accumulates very subtly. And it accumulates so subtly that we don't even recognize it oftentimes until we're in a place that's very unwell. And so dangerously tired is often characterized by this frenetic quality to our work, a compulsive overworking. So it's funny, dangerously tired can actually look like something else, and that's part of why it's hard to diagnose, is because we're at a point where we're working compulsively, and to other people and maybe even to ourselves, we think we're being heroic, but actually we're in a very dangerous place because we can't stop. Even when it's time to stop, we can't stop. You know, like when the day is done, we're not able to stop checking our emails, or we can't ever let anyone else fix the meal or bring the coffee or, you know, be on the committee or whatever. There might be a restlessness to our lives that's underneath the surface of our lives that we get in touch with when we get quiet. We might find that we are overreacting, that in situations that normally we could handle and take in stride, that we kind of go over an edge. You know, like a child does something that's an innocent mistake, and normally we would be able to take that in stride, but right now it puts us over the edge, and all of a sudden we are psycho mom, as my kids have called me at times, you know. And we're like, well, what is that? You know, usually I'm able to handle life better than that. Another characteristic of being dangerously tired is a strange thing, and that is that being emotionally numb, where we can't feel anything. And it's not only the bad things in life that we can't feel, but we can't feel the good things either. The whole range of human emotion is not available to us because we've just started to flatline emotionally. Because to engage life fully at the emotional level takes energy, and we're too tired for it.
It relates to marriage. It relates to how we parent. It relates to how we work. And yet, in this world, with all the incredible technology, it's really hard sometimes to turn off the email or to turn off the cell phone or whatever it may be. Any quick suggestions on what to do?
Well, I think we really do need to understand the dangers so that we can be more intentional and understand the compulsive nature of these things. And I keep using that word, but I do believe that it's compulsive in many of us, and also that it's something we're not aware of. Technology is a huge issue right now because it's really crept into our lives more than any of us are really aware of. So that even a few years ago, most of us did not have cell phones. Right. And now even the children have cell phones kind of strapped to their bodies or in their purses. With the way in which we can access email from anywhere. Technology is always with us, and so we can work all the time.
Yeah.
Or we can be available to others outside of our intimate life all the time. And so we never really rest. We never really unplug and fully rest ourselves in God and rest ourselves physically and emotionally and spiritually. So there's a tremendous amount of intentionality and true concrete decision making that's required if we're to move back from our dangerously tired position.
You know, it makes so much sense. Now, in your book, you talk about three different aspects that really bring rest. One would be body, mind, and then soul. Talk about the body for a moment. I appreciate that so much. If we're beginning to rest now in solitude and silence, how can it affect our body in a good way?
Well, one of the most powerful examples of rest for the body is, and actually the dangerous levels of depletion in the body, is the story of Elijah in 1 Kings 19, and I do speak of him in the book, where he is a great prophet and he's just accomplished something wonderful for the Lord. You know, if you remember your Bible stories in 1 Kings 18, he called down the fires of God upon the prophets of Baal, and, you know, God's presence came down in the fire and consumed everything in the vicinity, which was an amazing display not only of God's power, but an amazing affirmation of Elijah's role as a prophet. But then in 1 Kings 19, we see him threatened by Queen Jezebel, and he actually runs for his life. And in verses 3 and 4 of that chapter, we find him slumped down under a solitary broom tree, asking God that he might die. And he's so exhausted that he doesn't even know how to take care of himself physically. So God has an angel, sends an angel to him to help him to eat and to drink and to tell him to go to sleep and then to wake him up and say, it's time for you to eat and drink again and now go back to sleep. And the angel says to him, if you don't rest your body and strengthen your body with food and drink, the journey will be too much for you. Which is just a wonderful phrase, because Elijah didn't know he was on a journey. He had just gotten through telling God he was done, you know, like, you can take my life now. And if I was Elijah, I would have said, like, what journey? I told you I was done, remember?
Right.
And actually, it's the journey into God. It's the spiritual journey. It's the journey into solitude, which was the journey Elijah was on. And he eventually did find God in the solitude. But that strengthening of the body in solitude, for many of us, that's the first thing God's going to need to do with us, is to help us to pay attention to the state of our body. Am I overly tired? If I'm falling asleep in prayer, don't berate yourself, but notice, does this mean I'm too tired for the very disciplines that are supposed to give life to me?
And you even suggest that we should sleep.
Yes, that maybe the most spiritual thing any of us could do at a given time is to rest, so that we can then bring a more alert self into God's presence and into the presence of others. There's the issue of exercise and physical stamina, the fact that many of us don't care for our bodies from the standpoint of exercise, and so we're lethargic and even in some cases depressed for physical reasons. Because as we know, when we are caring for our bodies, and particularly in exercise, there are endorphins that are released that are very good for us and very good for our state of mind. So all of those things, all of those ways of caring for the body, and for me, when I first began this journey, that was the first thing that my spiritual director helped me to begin to attend to, was what was going on in my body that, you know, I was feeling so lethargic, and I was carrying extra weight, and so that wasn't helping, and I was not resting very well, so I was relying on caffeine, you know, for energy rather than allowing myself to really rest. That all of those things put me in a place where I was lethargic and unresponsive to God in my life.
Great input. We're going to take a break. We'll stand up, do a little exercise here. And when we come back, let's talk about our minds and our souls. And let's talk about emptiness. Lots of great input. I feel very much like you are being our spiritual director today. Thank you again for being with us. Take a break. We'll be right back. I'm Jim Burns, and you're listening to Homeward. More to come.
Invitation to Solitude in Silence is the name of the book by Dr. Ruth Haley Barton. It's a powerful book. It's a kind of gift-sized book that that kind of helps you as a Christ follower enter into the world of spiritual formation in the sense of soul care. I mean, it's not mystical. It's not Middle Eastern. It's very much biblically based, but it's really good for us. And today here on the Homeward broadcast, we're talking about how principles from that book allow us to experience peace amidst the pressures of life. If you'd like to learn more about Ruth's writing or any of her ministry, you can check it out for yourself. Go to homeward.com and then go to the radio broadcast section. And when you're there, you'll find the listing of all of the programs that we offer, our daily half hour, weekly half hour, etc. You'll find Ruth's name on the daily half hour list. Click there, follow the prompts, and you can learn more.
I'm Jim Burns with today's Homeward Snapshot.
Boy, what a week I've had. Oh, so busy. Oh, good, Pastor Jim's speaking today. Well, that should give me plenty of time to catch up on my email. What? System error. Oh, well, that's just great. Come on, you stupid computer. You can't quit on me now. Oh, well, this is just great. Now what am I supposed to do? Well, I guess I could listen to the message.
You know, if you can relate to what Bill Davis just went through, it's possible that God is getting the short end of the deal in your spiritual life. I know it's that way for me. Are you too busy for daily devotions anymore? Make the necessary adjustments to give God first place in your life again. And if you need help getting started, go to homeward.com and download my fact sheet called, Are You Too Busy for God? I'm Jim Burns for Homeward Snapshots. Welcome back to Homeward. I'm Jim Burns. Today we're talking about stopping the madness in your life, and it is not easy to do, but it's possible. And solitude and silence is the way. Ruth Haley Barton is helping us understand that today. It's just one of these days where, you know, I have a feeling that, you know, some of you have maybe been in the car and you've pulled over, so you can keep hearing this. It's a phenomenal conversation. Ruth, in your book, you talk about the Hebrew words for be still. Help us understand that, because you hear that, be still and know that I am God. What does it actually mean?
Well, the Hebrew word there is rapha, and it's a word that actually means to let go, literally let go of your grip. So that sense of your hand, of opening your hands and allowing whatever's in your hands to fall out. So it's to let go of my grip on everything I have my grip on, to let go in God's presence and to let God be God.
And that works with the body, but in such a way, it works with the mind as well. And so somehow we're to let go of a lot of the stuff that's in our mind and open it up to God. How do you do that in a busy world?
Yeah. The truth is that many of us, even though we might know how to rest our bodies, don't know how to rest our minds. Mm-hmm. And I encountered that in my own life one night when I woke up in the middle of the night and began preaching a sermon in the middle of the night, and I was still asleep. And my husband laughed with me in the morning, and he said it came out in complete sentences and everything. And I said, well, were you taking notes? but it alerted me to the fact that it was possible for my body to be resting and my mind to still be very hard at work. And I know that people who are listening have that experience where sometimes you even wake up more tired than when you went to sleep. Sure. Because your mind is working so hard through the night. And so silence is the primary discipline by which we allow our minds to rest, because our life in words really does represent a lot of our human striving and our intellectual hard work. You know, you think about it, putting things into words, categorizing things through words, making systems of thought through words, all of that requires the work of putting things into words. So the discipline of silence means that I'm literally stopping the work of the mind. I'm saying, thank you very much. You've worked really well on my behalf, but for these few minutes, I don't need you right now.
And this takes discipline.
It does, because everything in us screams to still work at it at the level of the mind.
Right, and you know, the scripture says, discipline yourself for the purpose of godliness. And so this isn't the part about grace. This is the part about rolling up your sleeves and having a discipline of silence, even if it's short, so you can begin that process of learning how to do that. Yeah,
that's right. Wise effort, intentionality. We can't do it for ourselves. Like, we can't make anything happen in those moments, but what we can do is to enter into the silence and stop the flow of our own words, both internally and externally. Like, it's not just about talking, it's also about thinking in, you know, so hard in words and in categories.
Well, now talk about, you use the word intentionality, talk about the difference between being intentional with solitude and silence, and actually, you know, first you have to be intentional, but then you have to finally kind of get it, and you have to have rest for your soul. How do you do that?
Well, rest for the soul, I've really described that as being very much like a child. In Psalm 131, the psalmist talks about being at rest in God and it being like being a child in God's presence, like the child that leans against its mother after it's nursed. And the soul at rest in God is really very much like a child. The soul at rest in God is able to be with whatever is in the presence of God. And whether it's grief or whether it's desire or whether it's anger or frustration or love or whatever, that the soul at rest in God is able to be with all of those aspects of our human experience and to allow God to just be with us intimately in that place. So in the part of solitude where we're resting the soul, we just let be whatever is true for us at that moment. I use the metaphor of musical chairs, that when you play musical chairs, you go round and round and round and round and round, and then when the music stops, you stop right where you are and you sit down. Oh. Well, in solitude, our lives go round and round and round and round and round, and in solitude we stop, and we sit down with God right where we are, and whatever is true for us in that moment, we allow ourselves to be with God there. We don't hold anything back, and by doing so, we invite God to be with us, and God knows how to be with us, and it's just as individual as a parent knowing how to be with a child in their sadness or in their grief. We know as parents what one child or another needs from us in those moments. And that's where solitude becomes such a personal and intimate discipline, because we allow God to be with us in some way that only God knows how to be with us.
And through this, and it's in another chapter that you write on, where you write on emptiness, in many ways through this, as we track our emptiness and these experiences, even if they're painful, it opens us up to what you called the substance of God.
Yes.
And, you know, that's what a lot of us as Christians want that. We want that for our families. How do you find that? How do you get to this emptiness?
Just by staying in it. By continuing in the journey. And so when there are those things in our lives that are difficult or painful, to just stay with God with those open and available in God's presence. And I think the challenge of solitude, and there are many challenges, but here the challenge is that God comes to us at God's own initiative, that we do not have God in our own back pockets. And many of the activities that we engage in as Christians, oftentimes it seems like we assume we've got God in our back pocket. Yeah. But in solitude and silence, we don't have control over when and how God comes and visits with us and meets with us. And again, in the story of Elijah, Elijah chose to open it all up in God's presence. He let it all come crashing out, you know, all of his disillusionment, his lack of faith, his depletion. And then God said to him, okay, take all of that, take who you really are and stand here on the side of this mountain and wait for me. And Elijah didn't have any control over when God would come or how God would come. All he could do was wait, and that's the empty place. But there's what's so powerful about that is that in solitude and silence, we begin to really allow God to be God in our lives. And however God does or does not make himself known in that moment, in some deep way, we trust God with ourselves and with our lives. And of course, we know that we come to a God who loves to come to us. We serve a God who comes. God has found all sorts of ways all throughout human history to come to us as human beings. And of course, the most significant way is in the incarnation. And so in solitude and silence, we trust ourselves to this God who does come to us and is waiting to come. And he comes to us on his own terms. He comes to us when he knows it is time. And all we can do is wait. And that is the emptiness. But in the emptiness, there's also that possibility of being filled. If we're so full of ourselves, there's no way for us to receive the presence of God. And that's the power of emptiness, is that once we've emptied ourselves of self and our own human striving, then finally there's enough space for God to come in and meet with us in ways that are truly and deeply satisfying.
That makes so much sense, and it causes us to face ourselves. And one of the things that I appreciate you said, and you used Elijah's story throughout your book, was that really there aren't any quick fixes, are there?
No, and solitude and silence is not a quick fix discipline. And if you look at that story of Elijah, there was the time that he spent resting and God caring for him physically, and then it says that he went on the strength of that food for 40 days and 40 nights before he even came to the mountain where he was to meet God. So it took at least 40 days and 40 nights, probably longer, before he even heard directly from God. He had heard from the angel, but God himself didn't come and address Elijah directly until later in the story. And then, of course, there was the chaos that came after that. God asked a question, Elijah answered the question, and then there was the chaos, the pieces of mountain breaking into the earthquake, the wind, and the fire. And that's a wonderful Bible story. I take it literally because I take the scriptures literally, but I also believe it's a metaphor for the chaos in the human soul, that once we begin to become quiet in God's presence, we start to know what's really real in us, and we experience our questions, and we experience our feelings of inadequacy. We experience the pains and the griefs of our life. We experience the questions that we thought we could never ask anybody because it would turn life upside down. And so the settling of that chaos needs to take place. And the scriptures don't indicate how long that took, how long it took for Elijah to stand through the storm of his own chaos. And then after that, at God's initiative and in God's time, God made himself known to Elijah. And we don't know how Elijah knew it was God. But this silence was qualitatively different than the first silence, when he was full of desperation and willing to give up and have God take his life. That was one kind of silence. That's the empty silence. But then after we've stood firm and stood through the empty silence, then there's this silence that is full of the presence of God. And so in the Elijah story, it says that there was the sound of sheer silence. And there, you know, the scriptures even struggle themselves to put this experience into words. There are several translations. One is a sound of a gentle blowing. Another translation says a sound of a gentle whisper. My favorite translation is the sound of sheer silence. Mm. And in that silence, somehow Elijah knew that God was in the silence. Somehow that silence was pregnant and full with the presence of God. And Elijah knew it, and we know that he knew it, because he stood and he wrapped his face in his mantle and he just stood in the presence of God.
Ruth, I only have time for one quick question, but how do you take all this incredible stuff that we're talking about in terms of moving deeper into solitude and silence and help your kids learn this lifestyle at a younger age than, say, you say you learned it, you know, at 30, and obviously are still learning it?
Well, first of all, we must live it winsomely ourselves, mm-hmm. for ourselves. And then eventually the kids will, they do start to see in us something that's really good. And eventually what I've found is that there are some things I can structure, or sometimes when I ask for it to be quieter. Like this morning when I took my daughter to school, she's 15, and she turned on the radio and I said, can we just be quiet? This morning's a little early for that kind of noise. And she accepted it just fine. I think it was better for her to start her day that way. Now my girls routinely will say to me, I know I really do need some time on my own. I need some time by myself. And they will seek it, and they will go into their rooms not to be sullen, but to know that they too have a need for quietness in God's presence. So it's more about how we live it in front of our children than how it is that we force it on them so that they begin to seek it themselves.
Great reminder. Well, Scripture says, be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him, and that's what we're all going to be motivated to do. Ruth, thank you so much for being with us in these last couple of programs.
It has been a joy. Thank you.
And thanks so much for all that you do. We appreciate it, and we hope to have you back on again.
Wonderful.
And that concludes Dr. Jim Burns' two-part conversation with Dr. Ruth Haley Barton here on the Homeward Broadcast. Experiencing peace amidst the pressures of life has been our theme. If you missed any part of this program or the program that preceded it, part one and part two are available in our archives at homeward.com. You can podcast this program and start a podcast subscription today. Go to homeward.com, hit the radio broadcast button. It'll take you right to a section where you can hit the podcast tab, and that'll take you right to our spot on iTunes, and you can pick that up as well. Also, we're just talking about the importance of how parents can model this type of life for their kids. And Dr. Jim Burns has a book that you will find very helpful toward this end. It's called Faith Conversations for Families. And if you are looking for a way to kind of get away from quote-unquote family devotions, but make it more of a faith conversation, this book is very practical. And you can order a copy directly from our Homeward Online Resource Center. When you do, a portion of the proceeds goes to supporting our ministry. For more ordering information, call 800-397-9725. Thanks, Roger, and thank you for your ongoing prayers and your financial support to make it possible for us to bring you great programs like today's program. Your partnership also enables us to extend the reach of Homeward into areas like our events, publications, online ministries, our daily devotional and monthly parenting newsletter. And if you don't know about that, then I encourage you to go to homeward.com. We appreciate your financial support, especially today. We could use it. And we're not looking just for people to support us once. We want a growing number of people to come alongside the Homeward movement. Let's make a difference in families together. And obviously, you can give us a call. Roger gives the number often. You can go to homeward.com and get all the information you need to become a part of the Homeward financial family in many ways. You're helping us reach out, not just here in the United States, but around the world. Until next time, I'm Jim Burns. Thanks for listening today to Homeward. Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.